online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Countdown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is going to be South Kansas City Police Officer Aaron Whitehead, who's a Community Interaction Officer at South Patrol. And also, we have our co-host, Marvita Oliver, in the studio. Good morning, Officer Whitehead. Morning. Welcome to Countdown Conversations.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So we've seen you don't have backup this morning. You were supposed to have backup, but she kind of left you high and dry.
Yeah, something happened there, and she's not able to make it, so she left just me to do it all by myself. That's all right.
All the best, Officer McCall.
We hope
you're feeling better.
Yes.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I have worked out at South Patrol my whole career. I started about 16 years ago. I've been working on the streets for about 15 years, which is what we call the streets, is just patrol, you know, answering 911 calls. I've done that for about 15 years, and about 7-8 months ago, this position opened up, and it was something that I wanted to do, and so I applied for it, and they gave it to me.
What was it about this position that you liked that appealed to you?
I enjoy the community. I enjoy people. And that's just kind of me. I just like interacting with people and having those relationships. I always, even when I was on the streets, I always took the time just to, you know, to go and stop and talk to people. And I mean, it was just part of what I believe, is a good community policing. So, but I enjoy it too. So
what made you decide to become a police officer?
Well, it's a little bit of a funny story. I was my dad was a police officer, and I was actually transferring information from him to a friend of mine who was looking into being a police officer, who was wanting to, you know, apply. And during that, you know, back and forth between my dad and my friend, I was getting all this information and collecting all this information of, like, you know, this is what you do, this is, you know, the benefits, this is what, you know, happens on the job. And during that transition of that information, I thought, man, this seems like pretty good. This seems like me, you know. I mean, it seems like something that I would really enjoy to do. And I went for it. My dad had always told me never be a police officer because he was one. And he just always had told me never be a police officer. And when the day I went and told him, I said, hey, I'm going to apply. I got to do this. He said, well, good. He said, I'm proud of you. He said, I just didn't want you to do it just because of me. I want you to make the decision for yourself. So,
wow.
So that was it.
Mm-hmm. That can be definitely, that was a proud moment for your dad. So when your child comes to you and says, I want to be a police officer, now you have some background and history to be able to think about,
Yes, right. Yep, I know. I agree. Yep.
Maybe it was a trick. Maybe your friend really wasn't trying to apply and your father was just using you to get you to see all that information.
Yeah. Maybe. You never know.
Uh-huh.
So you are a community interaction officer for South Patrol. What is the role of the community interaction officer?
Our role is to just a lot of it is a lot of speaking. We do a lot of talking with the community, in the HOAs, which can be your home associations, at the different kind of group community meetings. Sometimes, you know, South Kansas City Alliance, they'll put on an event out at, or, you know, somewhere out South Patrol, which they might want us to come in and do some training on crimes prevention and safety and stuff like that. So we do that. You know, neighborhood problems, some, you know, neighborhood feuds and stuff that go beyond just the ordinary 911 call. You know, they will contact us and we'll go out and try to set up mediation between, you know, different people and different households and families and stuff like that. Just trying to come up, really, we try to come up with creative solutions to an already creative solution that the police might have. We just try to dig a little deeper and try to, you know, really solve the problem instead of, you know, a lot of times as a police officer, you don't have a lot of time and you're just kind of putting a Band-Aid on a situation.
I know, that's where I met you. I was at the South Kansas City Alliance meeting and you all handed out some great tips that we're going to talk about later, 9 After 9. So, and you all giving information to the community how they can actually stay safe in their own homes and things that they can do. So, how does community interacting officers, I know you come to meetings, that when I was a neighborhood president, you would come for, give the crime stats and different things, but what all do you, are you really available to do to help neighborhoods?
You know, of course the meetings, we also can do a, you know, security survey at your house, at your business. It's a pretty easy, painless process, and usually it's pretty fun because we just have a good time trying to go around and find different ways to prevent, you know, a crime at your house or whatever.
Well, that's really interesting that you say that. I have a I know someone who is having some issues at her home where there's more than one break-in over a short period of time or more than one attempt. And what do you do for something like that? Would they call you? Which, who would they call? And how? And then you talk about coming out to the home. How does that process work?
I see. You just call your the closest division to you. So if you're in South Patrol, and you may not know exactly which division you're in, call the division, South Patrol, Metro, Center, whatever it might be, and they'll get you to the right place. And you'll want to talk to the CIO, Community Interaction, of that division, and they have the same paperwork I do, and they'll just set up a time with you whenever is good for you, and they're available, and come out and walk around and try to figure those things out.
So you're walking around the house and looking at maybe access points, things like that?
Yeah.
What types of suggestions do you make?
A lot of what the training that we get a little bit of extra training as well in just crime prevention, and because that's what we do. And one of them being SEPTED, which is crime prevention through environmental design. Which I'm no expert in by any means at all, but what SEPTED, what it is mainly, if you boil it all down, what it is just creating an environment that has less opportunities to commit crime. I mean, there's less opportunities that somebody can commit crime there. Even just showing ownership of your building, your house, which is just having it look nice on the outside. If you have a light that's out, you need to replace it. You know, things like that. A window that's cracked, fix it. You know, I mean, I know it costs money, but, you know, those things, keeping that maintenance up on your house, on your building, because criminals come and they see that and they think, well, this person cares. They care about their possessions. They care about their stuff. I'll leave them alone. I'll go to somebody who doesn't care.
Wow. Okay. So that's the mentality you're dealing with.
It's kind of, it's just, you don't think about that until somebody says it to you, and then you think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
When you talk about lighting, how important is lighting when it comes to deterring crime at your house or at a business?
I believe it's 90% of crime is committed in the dark. 90%. So that's a very high number.
So the more light you have, because criminals don't like to be in places where they can be seen.
Correct.
And if you can do that, then you can then turn around and decrease your chances of being a victim of crime.
Correct. Front and back. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, get that light out there, you know, front porch, back porch, on the sides if you can.
So it's a good
motion
idea. Yeah.
You know, motion lighting, regular lighting. You want to have a mix of it all. I mean,
is it a good idea to keep your lights on at night then?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
He's very serious with this. Yes, everybody.
Yes.
Okay. I know some people who don't, and I know some people who do.
Yeah.
But I should join the group who does.
I really think that you should have light on at night. Before this training, I kind of thought, well, I should leave the light off so people can't see what I have or see what's going up on up here at the house, see my front door, but that's just not the truth. It's just not the reality. Through the training that I've been through, the reality is that you need the light. And that's just it. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
How does crime impact a neighborhood and a community? From, you know, as we look at certain sectors of town, they have more crime than others, and people are going to say, well, I won't go to that part of town because it's high crime. So how can crime damage a community in those negative ways?
I mean, there's all kinds of ways, of course, but, you know, I mean, one of the screaming ones is house values. Crime and just in having relationships with your community, you know, to me, I think of even kids being outside and playing, you know, they can't go outside when there's high crime, you know, and feel as safe and comfortable, you know, with letting your kids go outside. And that's just that's not a way to live, you know, it's that peace. You know, in the end, there's a piece about, you know, having some place to go that you can feel safe and secure and just live with your family and you know, it gives you some joy, some peace, all those things that crime affects that.
Effective community policing requires a partnership between the police department and the community in deterring crime and building their trust, but also increasing the quality of life in the neighborhoods. How can we work further to increase that so residents feel comfortable working with the police department, building their trust in our communities?
First, building that trust between the police and the community is just getting out there and, you know, there's some people that are very against being around the police, and they've had experiences. I won't say bad experiences, but they've had experiences that have made them not want to associate with the police department. They've had, you know, family members that have told them don't associate with the police department. I would say when that starts happening, get out there and go to some events where there's going to be some CIOs or police officers. Go and see them. Another thing you can do is go and do a ride along. I know that, I mean, some people would probably think that's crazy, but going and doing a ride along where you can and go and sit with an officer that will, I mean, they will bend over backwards to do everything. I mean, they just will. The police department is very good at that with the ride-along, you know, program.
You go to the website to sign up for that?
You know, I don't know if it's on the website. I know, I bet there is. I know there, yeah, there. I'm sure there is. There's an application.
Well, you have to and I've been on two ride-alongs. You have to go through, I went through the Citizens Police Academy, and I work with them to go on the ride-alongs. So you can go as little as, I think it's 4 hours, but I did an entire shift, so it was interesting.
It's,
I will say that
it's interesting, and it's fun. I don't know. I always when I had a ride along, I tried to make it fun for them. You know, we we would do what we could. You know, if we could go code one, which means, you know, putting those lights and sirens on and going fast, you know, we would do it. You know, if I could have an excuse to do it, and go, I'd take a call just to take them with me and go and do those fun things and you know, try and get, you know, the criminals. And
that is not fun. We did that three times. We were responding to real crimes in Kansas City, and I got to do that three times up and down Prospect, and I'm checking each time to make sure that my seatbelt is tight.
Yes.
Because we're going down Prospect at about 65 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then as we got halfway, almost there each time, some other officer had responded. So then we turned around, went someplace else, and then he'd come back again. But for people that may not know what Code 1 is, what things in Kansas City are a Code 1 offense? Means police are going to respond with lights and sirens flashing.
Anything to do with somebody being hurt are going to be things that we come with lights and sirens. Any disturbance. So it could be an argument where there is potential for there to be bodily harm or injury or somebody assaulting somebody else. We're going to come code one. Anything is going to be like a property crimes where you got your burglaries, your car was broken into, your car was stolen. That's all going to be stuff that we're not going to come code one on. I know there's a lot of times that it takes a long time for the police to get there because they're going to all those other calls first. I mean, we go to all the other ones where there could be possible injuries. We go to those first, and then when we get done with those, then we start going to the...
So anything where there's potential for loss of life or a potential situation where somebody may have a firearm and is a direct threat to life, those are essentially our Code 1 events.
Absolutely. Injury, anything.
So, yeah, and it's kind of, I know I got to see a couple of people go to jail, and it's on the ride along, and they were like, no, we really don't want to do that. So that's the situation of, you know, the police officers really try to talk it out of it first to kind of go from there. So we got a question come in, but I asked this question. When Chief Smith, he doubled the number of CIOs, because originally there was just one CIO per division. He stated that strong neighborhoods are those that are well-organized, where residents are engaged, have lower levels of crime. Why is that? It's like the nosy neighbor principle.
It is. And there's something to do with that disconnect between people. So if you have a connection with somebody, you are going to you're going to want to – you have a vested interest in their stuff as well. So if you have a relationship with somebody, relationship, what I'm talking about, it could just be saying hello to your neighbor. I mean, that's still some kind of communication with your neighbor, and you're getting to know your neighbors. So during that time, during that period, then now you've put a face with the name. Now you have some kind, you know, hey, Bob, who lives next door, he's a good guy. I want to protect his stuff too. There's that, so that disconnect is where people we can forget about things, and we can not think about things. If we don't have any connection to our neighborhoods, then we don't care about our neighborhoods. And so that's where I think the chief is talking about. You know, we have, you know, once we create this environment where people are talking and have this connection and have these relationships with each other, then people want to protect each other. I mean, not just their own stuff. But now we're starting to reach out and go, man, I want to protect Sally's stuff down here too. And I saw somebody walking through their yard.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should call 911. I should call 911 is what should happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, something might be wrong there. I don't know. But, you know, at least call 911, let us know, and we'll come out and check. It's easy for us to come out and check.
When you see that, and we know there are more people in Kansas City, there are 450,000 people in Kansas City and only about 1,200 police officers, and they are responding to everything. When you see events like that, and I know the most important thing that we were told at Citizens Police Academy is that you can just be a witness. But if you can, say, take a picture of that person with your cell phone, you know, video different things. Mm-hmm. How important is things like that to helping the police to, one, apprehend that person, but two, if there's a crime committed, to solving that crime?
Well, police, we're all people. We're all humans. If we see, just like anybody else, if we see the victim putting some kind of, which you're talking about, you know, taking a picture or getting, you know, video or just our feelings when we come and we come in contact with that, is that we feel more energized to do more, because this person, he's taking, he or she is taking some kind of, you know, an extra step. You know, they are really trying to, you know, prevent this crime or stop whatever is happening. And we see that they're interested. If a police officer goes somewhere and nobody cares, you know, they call 911, but police will take care of it, I don't care. That attitude is not the right attitude, because then the police, they're not going to care that much either. And there's no reason for them to, because if the victim or the witness, let's say the witness, if the witness and nobody cares to give good information, if we can't come and talk to you, then we have nothing to go on. We can't keep investigating a crime unless we have some reason to investigate that crime. So that's very valuable.
So the more people in the community to care also makes it easier job for the police department when it being able to work with, because, you know, they have to be a witness. You know, I know some people are afraid to do that, to talk about it, but being a witness and providing that information makes it easier. We all may not care when it's somebody else's house, but if it turns around and it's our house, then we want to talk to our neighbors and sit and say, well, why didn't you work with them, police department? So it's a two-way street, that if you are working with the police department, knowing your neighbors and watching your neighbors, and you helpful, they will do the same thing for you. And I can say that because I know about 3 years ago I had a situation like that, and my neighbor called the police, and I was already there, and I was watching, and I was calling the police. And, you know, crime only happens when more than a vacuum than people think, but somebody always sees and somebody always knows.
Yeah. You know, and like what you were saying with the police, what were you saying exactly? About how when you call 911, if people don't care, then we're not going to put that extra step into it. I mean, we're just not. We have to have people. And there's ways to even be a witness. You know, there's the tips hotline. You can still do the tips hotline. You can do things. There's an app that you can download on your phone and to report stuff to the tips hotline. You can upload pictures, upload videos, all that stuff, all the tips hotline, and they'll get that information to the unit or the police department. It may not even be Kansas City. It might be Independence. They'll get that information to the right place.
We've got a caller on line one. Gina, can you tell us what your question is and what your comment may be for Officer Whitehead?
Yes, my name is Gina. I'm from Kansas City, Kansas. And I was just calling to see how the police handle things like people being afraid of the police. I'm familiar with quite a number of people that don't want to get the police involved because they're afraid of the police. Pretty much in general. So I'm familiar with someone who's concerned about a domestic disturbance that goes on, and they don't want to call the police because they don't want to get the police over there because they're afraid that it might cause more problems. And I'm just wondering, what do the police do about things like that?
You have to... And in those situations, I would, say that you need to either decide if that domestic situation is, if it's a family issue, and if it's a family issue, then that's fine, and you can handle it that way. But if it goes beyond being a family issue, where you're talking about somebody getting hurt,
right,
then it has to, I mean, you have to go beyond the fear of calling the police, because we can't let somebody just get hurt. We can't. Nobody. Yeah. Nobody deserves that.
How do we help the people not to be afraid of the police, or what can I
to create
what can
that.
I do or say, or, you know, to help them through that, because it is necessary sometimes.
You know, to say that from one person to the other, that's just a difficult situation. The only thing, you know, I can say is from a police standpoint, I mean, you can tell them that, you know, the police are still, we're people. I mean, you know, we're just a person. We're just a person that does a job. And just like you might, you know, whatever job you go to, you know, but that's not my identity. It's not, you know, my whole identity is not a police officer. And that's how, I mean, especially in Kansas City. Now, you know, I've heard good things about Kansas City, Kansas police officers too, because they deal with those situations a lot. So usually we're able to go into a situation and calm things and not do the opposite, not create, you know, more problems. Usually, you know, we go into a situation and we kind of calm things, get to the bottom of it. If there's some kind of situation where somebody needs to be arrested, then we do that. You know, I've done that plenty of times. I've arrested plenty of people. I don't know in 15, and I've been on the police department, and I was out in the streets for 15 years. In those 15 years, the people that I've arrested, there might be 2-3 that would not want to talk to me today.
Right.
And I'm just saying, that's the honest truth. If I run into anybody that I've arrested in the past, I say hello, how are you, how's things going? Because it was just a situation where that had to happen. I mean, that was just the choice that had to be made. It wasn't that I was, it was personal. It's not personal against that person, or I wasn't ticked off at them and I'm going to do this now. It's just the crime had been committed. It's time to go to jail. We're going to go. We're going to take care of this, and you're going to get through it, you know? So, I mean, maybe some of those kind of things you can, you know, relay to that person that, you know, I personally, in 15 years, 16 years, like I said, there's going to be less than 5 people that wouldn't, that would just, you know, turn away from me and walk away and wouldn't, you know, that would be actually really upset with me.
Well, there seems to be even an increase in the police department trying to reach out to the community. Aren't there more social workers at the police stations that somebody like this caller could reach out to if they're not so comfortable with calling the police per se? They might call or ask for, is there a social worker that we can talk to?
Yes, those requests have to go through the CIOs, the community interaction officers. And that's in Kansas City. I don't know Kansas City, Kansas. They probably have a different way.
Or maybe do you ever have maybe mediators go out with you that can kind of help de-escalate things that get out of hand? So it doesn't go over the top.
That's what we would use our social workers for.
Okay.
In Kansas City, they would come with us, and I've done that. I've been with the social worker when we've gone to somebody's house and trying to help. You know, just make sure that the person was going to be safe. You know, that's the main thing. You know, arresting somebody, that might be the step we take to make sure somebody's safe, but that's not always the way. There's different ways than just arresting people. You know, so yeah, sometimes we use a social worker, and we use the Kansas City Conflict for Resolution, which they will do mediation for us as well, but that's a thing where we set up mediation and they go to the mediation. Okay. We don't bring the mediator to, you know, the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Well, I appreciate your words. I appreciate hearing that.
Well, I I don't feel like I was a whole lot of help, but I tried.
Thank you so much, Gina.
You did fine.
That was
Thank
helpful.
You.
Yeah.
We've got another call on line two. Tom, are you still there? Yes, we lost Tom. You can give us a call back, Tom. So there's a lot of different things, and I can say when police officers really try to do the least amount of things possible. When we were working for, when I was on the ride along, they then turned around and they asked an individual to comply, and it was because he didn't comply is why he went to jail.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I always, you know, behind my pen, so my pen is about my most used tool that I use as a police officer. We just use our pen. That's the tool we use. But behind that is probably a very close second is going to be my mouth. Just using my words to communicate to, you know, somebody, you know, who's we might have to arrest. Like he said, you know, we'll ask you to comply, you know, give you the reasons why. Like, hey, you know, if you don't, then, you know, this is going to go a whole different road and we don't want to do that. Anytime we start putting hands on each other, somebody can get hurt, including the officer. And we all know that. Not only can we hurt the person, but we can be hurt as well. It just, anytime you start creating those situations, it's bad. So we try to avoid it. We try to just come to a quick resolution that is peaceful and safe.
Caller on line 291, can you call us and tell us your name and what your question or comment may be for Officer Whitehead?
Yes, my name is Tom, and my location is Plaza Westport neighborhood here in Midtown. I've been reading a book about the early years of Kansas City history. An issue came up that local control of the police department was taken away, and now the police department is controlled by the state. And I'm just really curious about that and wonder if you can make a comment or two about that, about why that continues like 120 years after it happened. And what difference that makes for policing, and is that common in other places of the country, or is Kansas City like the only place where that happens? And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen to your response on the radio. Thanks so much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Tom.
Okay. That is and like he kind of talked about, I can't give a whole lot of, I mean, these are going to be like personal opinions and not the opinions of the police department. But, you know, that the reason that was taken away is because of the mob and the ties that the mob had with the city and the police department. You couldn't arrest certain people and that kind of stuff. My opinion of it today is still somewhat the same. My problem with giving the control back to the city, and you know, this is my personal opinion. Not I'm going to say that again. Not the opinion of the police department. I don't know what the opinion of the police department is. You'd have to talk to somebody higher up than me. But is that I still don't want that. I don't want to see that for Kansas City. I want to see an environment where the police can arrest anybody. And that's the way it should be. If you commit a crime, if you do something wrong, then you need to be arrested. I mean, you need to pay for that crime. If you have a city official who is able to call your sergeant and say, hey, don't arrest that person, because he's my son or he's my daughter and you can't, you know, I'm telling you not to arrest him. That's not a good environment for policing. It's just not.
I know a lot of that goes back to the Pendergast era where Boss Pendergast controlled everything in Kansas City. And with that, as you said, certain people could be arrested, certain people couldn't be arrested. And that's when we lost local control. But we do have a 5-member panel that police commissioners, with the mayor being one of those commissioners, so we do have a semblance of local control. It's just that the decisions have to be transmitted to Jeff City, to the governor, and then they come back. But the governor appoints those people, and all those people that reside on the police commission are local, live in Kansas City, or impacted by things that happen in Kansas City. So we do have a little bit of local control. We're the last remaining city in Missouri that does not have local control, and I think we're probably one of two in the nation that does not have local control. But we've got to take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM, KKFI. We're talking with Officer Aaron Whitehead of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department South Control, Community Interaction Officer. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. You're listening to 90.1 KKFI, Cowtown Conversations. This is Joseph Jackson, your host, and we have Marvita Oliver, our co-host. And today we're talking with Officer Aaron Whitehead, who is the Community Interaction Officer for the South Kansas City Police, South Patrol Division of KCMO, which is located right there off of Bannister Road and Marion Drive. So as we talk about crime, we've talked about a little bit about the Citizens Police Academy, that program, and a caller that called in was asking about, you know, if they have a situation. KCPD is unique. We have what's called CIT, Crisis Intervention Team Officers. Can you briefly discuss what a Crisis Intervention Team Officer is and how they can help when called out onto a scene?
They have, I'm a CIT, or I have CIT training. And actually, right now, the chief is in the process of training every police officer to be a CIT officer, so which I think is a good thing. But what the extra training that we have is to, you know, to help to try to those situations where there's somebody might be in a crisis, and to be able to step back just a little bit as a police officer, understand that crisis, and then try to create a solution for that.
What's a crisis then?
So a crisis can be, it can really be anybody, but, you know, sometimes an emotionally disturbed person is what we call it. They might be in crisis. There can be, you know, mental development issues there where, you know, they're unable to communicate, you know, correctly at what they are feeling, what they, you know, need. Those situations, there's situations where somebody may want to harm themselves. That's going to be, we're going to consider that a crisis. That person is in crisis. Or if that person is, I mean, because you gotta think, we don't come into a contact with a lot of people that want to hurt somebody else, but sometimes we do. And it's same thing. It can be an emotionally disturbed person sometimes. Sometimes it can be anybody. I mean, you just, you know, feel that you're going to hurt somebody else. You know, well, I'm going to hurt my mom because she did this. Those are the situations where, you know, we can come in and we have that extra training. We have extra resources, which are going to include, like, the mobile crisis hotline number is a fantastic hotline, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And any time you can call them, and they'll have a counselor that would talk to you. But we have those extra resources available to us where, you know, we can try to give that person some kind of information to help them get out of crisis to where they can come back down, and we try to guide them. I mean, we have, you know, they give us tools to kind of bring people back down and calm, and to where we can talk and figure out what's wrong.
So more like coping with the situation, helping them to cope.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely coping skills and things like that.
We've seen an increase in, especially around the holidays, of people stealing things from porches. And I know that that's led to a lot of people purchasing the video doorbells and the floodlight cameras. How effective are those, or deterrent are those, in fighting crime?
They're very effective. They may not always stop the package from being taken, but they're going to give us the information, because what happens is a lot of times it's if you have in a neighborhood, if you have five different houses that the packages were taken off the porch, taken from the house, you're not going to have five different criminals. You're going to have one. So now if the police we start looking at, you know, Sally's video doorbell, and we look at, you know, Bob's down the street and Ryan's across the street, and we start seeing, hey, this is this person and this is the way they're going and this is which direction they're going. It gives us some kind of path to then, and we usually do. We track down who that is through neighbors, and that's, again, that's that community policing, that relationship between police and the community. So now we're able to take this information back out to the community and say, hey, do you know this person? Where, you know, if so, where do they live? Well, I know they kind of live maybe one of these houses over here, da, 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 da. And then we're able to track that down to where it is and get that person arrested. And a lot of times get the property back, but also arrest them and make them, you know, go to court and have their time in court.
So. I know Ring has a program that, I know I've purchased a Ring, and they have a program where if you have that Ring system, you can connect to all the other different Ring systems in the neighborhood and begin to see those same people that may be stealing, and it gives you an alert when it's happening within your neighborhood. I know Kansas City Police Department has a program called Watch KC, where residents can register their cameras in the systems. What is Watch KC?
Watch KC is a, you can go online, and again, you go online, KCPD, if you search in Google, KCPD, Watch KC, it's all one word. It'll bring up, the first page will be the page that has that web, the website on it. And you can go on there and you can register. What happens when you register is it, all it does is your address and your name, your information. It goes on a list. That list is then available to the detectives. So the detectives, if they have a same kind of situation I was talking about, if they have a house on a street that was burglarized, they can go to that street and see how many people on that list have cameras that might be recording, and then they can go out and ask for permission to look at, to review the camera. It's not a live feed where we can just live feed your cameras at any time. All it is the information for us to be able to come out and contact those neighbors and ask permission. And we have to have permission. We can't just come into your barge in your house and once you're registered and we can take your camera information.
So you
it's
would,
all permission.
So if something was happening and my name was on the list, then you would come by and I would physically either show you the film or send you the film, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And along with that, he was talking about the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
The police department, Kansas City Police Department, partnered with Ring a couple months ago, and they can also send out an email through that application in the same thing. So if there's a crime on your street, they can send out an email blast to all the people in your neighborhood that they have to be registered on that application, on that app, the Ring app, which there's two separate Ring apps.
Mm-hmm.
There's one for owners, and then there's one that's called Neighbors. And that one is for anybody, which is another great tool to use in your neighborhood, because it's for anybody. And anybody, and you can upload videos from any camera. You don't just have to have a Ring camera to the Ring application that is just for everybody.
Okay.
There's two separate.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's good to know.
Yeah.
So most of the time when people are contacting the police, it's 911, it's an emergency. But as you said, officers need a lot to go on. What are some of the things that people need to write down, jot down, to give to the police when they're calling 911 that the call taker is going to ask them?
And that is, the first thing you said there is just having the paper and the pen.
Mm.
Have that available next to your phone. If you need to put something, you know, in your car, in the console, you know, paper and pen or whatever, make sure and have those tools available. Because trying to remember things when it happened in a second, what happens is if you're not used to looking for crime, then you're not looking for crime. and something happens so quick, so fast, and you're not able to pay attention enough to be able to write down. So the things you might need is going to be clothing description, license plate, colors of clothing, the colors of a car, all that kind of information. And we actually have, and I don't know if that's on the website or not, but we have a form. I know the CIOs have a form available to us that you can, that's it. And KCPD has a form that actually has a whole list of different things to look for and to write down. It gives you boxes for you to be able to write them down during an emergency situation. Because even after you tell the dispatcher, then you start, or the call taker, then you start going rewinding in your head and thinking about, you know, what just happened, and things might change. You paid attention to more detail. After you get off the phone, go on that list again. After you've told the call taker, go on that list again and go through each item, trying to, you know, make sure you can try to identify as many of those characteristics of the crime that you can.
You had mentioned something about, you know, looking out for crime. Is that something people should do? I mean, can you say look out for crime and then maybe add a, okay, caution? This is how you do it, or this is when you do it, or what kind of attitude you have to have about doing it?
The attitude, and I, you know, I've had this talk with my wife, because I want her to be ready, you know. And the attitude, you know, is just mainly, you know, don't look for, I wouldn't say, you know, looking for crime all the time, because that's just going to, it's just not something you can do in your life to every day, all day, you know, looking for crime. That you're going it's just a depressing thing to do. I mean, but paying attention to your environment. And this goes back again to that SEPTED thing that we talked about at the beginning, which is going to be crime prevention through environmental design. But it also goes back to that and just paying attention to your surroundings. So I don't know if you can go on YouTube and find these videos, but there's definitely videos out there where, you know, officers have a criminal who used to be a criminal has said, well, here, I'll partner with the police and I'll show you the people that I pick for victims. I would maybe steal their car. I would maybe rob from them. And they'll go to a gas station, and I know one in particular is, you know, this guy went with the police. They went to the gas station, and there was a guy standing there with his cell phone and his head down, and he's typing on his cell phone. He's pumping gas and looking at, you know, whatever on his cell phone, not looking up, not paying attention. Well, that's the person he says, I'll go after him. There was, you know, a lady next to him who is standing upright, you know, looking around. Just, I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, like with your eyes bugged out, but just, you know, keep paying attention, keeping your eye, keep, you know, looking around, watching what's going on, looking at people. And so, and he said, and that person, her, I would not, because she's looking, she's ready. She, you know, she is looking for, maybe not looking for crime, but she's paying attention. She's going to see me before I get close, you know, whatever it might be. I'm not going to go after her. I'm going to go after this person who's got his head down.
Thanks for sharing that.
We have seen an increase in violence in the metropolitan area. We've had two shootings at Oak Park Mall, a shooting at Austin's and Olathe. What should people do if they find themselves out in the community in a situation where maybe inside a mall, outside a mall, a shooting starts to take place? What should people do in that situation?
First and above everything else, get away, run, and get safe. Be in a safe, get yourself safe first and foremost before everything else, is get somewhere safe, which can be, you know, barricading yourself somewhere. If you might need to barricade yourself in a room, You know, there's ways with, you know, floor mats. Have you ever thought of your floor mat gets stuck behind your door at the front door and you can't get it open?
Mm-hmm.
Do that behind the door if there's a floor mat so somebody can't open it. But just simple, you know, there's simple things like that if you prepare yourself for that situation. So getting to a safe place, once you get to a safe place, then you could, if you have a cell phone, you can call 911. If, you know, you might need to protect yourself with a weapon, not only just firearms, there's all kinds of things that can be weapons. There's plenty of things in this office that I can use for weapons that's not mm-hmm. my firearm. So if that, you know, whatever, if they come to you, if they try to get to you, you have some way to protect yourself and protect yourself. I mean, and at that, then at that point, so once you've got to a safe place, once you've barricaded, you know, all that kind of stuff, now if somebody comes to you, you fight. And you fight to the tooth and nail, and you don't ever give up, because they're gonna take advantage of the weak,
mm-hmm.
and that's what these people most of these people are looking for is taking advantage of the weak,
mm-hmm.
and so if you show yourself to not be weak, then they're gonna most of the time they're gonna go somewhere else.
And if you're too much trouble, they don't want to be bothered.
That's exactly my point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we close out here, we want to discuss quickly your. You all created a sheet that I love that's called Join Us for New Crime Prevention Tools called 9 p.m. After 9 Routine. Can you quickly talk about that and things that people can do right at 9 o'clock to keep themselves from being a victim of crime?
Yes. It doesn't have to be done at 9 o'clock, but it's a routine. That's the point. And what this is like 9 p.m. routine. So saying, you know, every day before you go to bed, do these things. Whatever, just set up some kind of routine daily to where you go out and it's five things, five simple things.
Mm-hmm.
Removing valuables from your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
you know, how many times that we go out to where somebody's broken to their vehicle and they had a bag, they had a laptop, they had whatever it was in the car and it was visible,
mm-hmm.
and they'll pick those cars because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if you've got, I'm a victim of this as well. I've done the same thing. I had my police bag in the back of my truck and it was parked outside and it was just, it wasn't really valuable to me. I mean, it was just my clothes and, reports, you know, paper reports. It's no value. Well, somebody thought it was of value because they broke the window and took my bag. Well, now somebody, and this is what, you know, we don't always think about the follow-up with that is, you know, you might have something in there, you know, that's identifying to you. You might have, you know, a credit card or checks or whatever. Mine was, I had my police stuff in there. So now people, you know, these people had my police stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We got it back, but that's the situation. Get that stuff out of your car.
Okay, and what's some more?
Ensure your car doors are locked and windows are rolled up. That's another simple solution to stop that from getting from opening the doors. Check your mail. So the reason we check the mail is so that people see that your mail has been taken out of your, and they think you're home. So mm-hmm. if your mailbox gets overloaded and it's full, then somebody can look at that and go, well, they're on vacation, so this is going to be easy target.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure your garage door or all exterior doors and windows are closed and locked, which again, I've been, I've done this before where I leave the garage door open, but that's why we set up this routine. So then mm-hmm. we walk around and we get all that stuff done. Turn on your exterior lights.
All right.
And it says thieves hate lights.
I can do that.
But we talked about that early, you know. So
I would like to thank Officer McCall she was supposed to show up today, but Officer Aaron Whitehead also for coming and being our guest today on Cowtown Conversations. So if you need to contact them, what's the number they can give you a call at South Patrol Station?
My number to my office is 949-1649.
I'm turning on my lights.
Thank you. We never in Cowtown Conversations without our community minute. The Census Bureau is holding a recruiting session tomorrow, January the 4th, at from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Roger J. Mohart Center, 3200 Wayne. And then this Saturday, South Patrol is going to be having their night of fun. They will have a talent show with Kids versus Cops. And then before the 7 p.m. showing of Zootopia. So South Patrol, again, is located at 9701 Marion Park Drive. The number for more information is 816-234-5550. KKFI is like a family, and sometimes when a family member has a project or a task they want to undertake, other members of the family pitch in to help. For the last month, you've heard some different voices on Cowtown Conversations, and in the future, you'll hear a few more. For the next 8 weeks, I'm going to be taking some time off to pursue a seat on Kansas City, Missouri City Council 3rd District, so this is not goodbye. I will be back, but we're going to still continue to have the same type of great programming and guests. I would like to thank all of our guests, and most importantly, all of you that are listening and tuning in each week. Without you, Cowtown Conversations would not have been possible. Continue to tune in each week, and next week we'll have the Deputy Fire Chief, Jimmy Walker, here to discuss fire safety. For Cowtown Conversations, it's been your host, Joseph Jackson, and co-host, my beautiful Albert. Have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.